Just to refresh our memories, in January we looked at, I will put enmity between you and the woman. That was God speaking in the Garden of Eden, outside the Garden of Eden. God's in control of that. Satan's not in control of that, God is. Because God's doing it. Last one thing was, I'll give you all the land that you see as Abraham splits up from Lot. And Lot goes down the valley where it's nice and green, and God says to Abraham, listen, lift up your eyes. I will give you all this land. God says, I will. We've got this morning two I wills. In Genesis chapter number 18. I'm just going to read some verses from that, just to put it in context. God has come down, and with two angels, it seems, has appeared to Abraham. And in verse number, they've met together, and they've had a meal, and they've done this ceremony of dedication. And God says in verse number 9 of Genesis 18, where is your wife Sarah? There in the tent, he said. Then the Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I am worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure? Then the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, I did not laugh. Well, the Lord said, yes, you did laugh. I will return to you at the appointed time, and you will have a son. Twice, she was told that, Abraham was told that twice in that passage. And further down the chapter, we have this incident where Abraham and God have this conversation. It's more than any ordinary prayer meeting. It's God and Abraham talking together about the situation. And verse 20 says this, then the Lord said, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great, and their sins so grievous, that I will go down and see if what they have done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know. The men turned away and went towards Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Then Abraham approached him and said, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? What if there are 50 righteous people in that city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous people in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? The Lord said, if I find 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Then Abraham begins to speak to God from 45 people, 40 people. Verse 32 says, verse 31, now that I have been so bold as to speak to the Lord, what if only 20 can be found there? The Lord said, for the sake of 20, I will not destroy it. Then he said, may the Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there? He answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. When the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left. And Abraham returned home. May God bless those verses to our hearts this morning. When God says, I will, it means that he will. In this lovely passage here, we have twice where the Lord says to Abraham and Sarah, I will do something. The first one is quite specific. At this time next year, I will surely return, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. So in the next 12 months, your wife Sarah will have a son. Now Abraham was concerned that Ishmael was going to inherit, or one of the servants was going to inherit. But God had made a promise. Through your son, I will bless the world. And God's covenant was going to be with the son that he promised to Abraham and Sarah. He had a child with Hagar called Ishmael. And God was going to bless Ishmael to be a great nation. And God did bless Ishmael to be a great nation. I think his name was Eleazar, the servant, was not going to inherit, because God had bigger plans, greater plans, not only for Abraham's family, but through Abraham's family, to bless all the races and kingdoms of the earth. This was an amazing part of God's plan. And as we had in the quiz, Sarah was 90 years of age. Abraham was about 100. Past childbearing age. But God has made a promise. God has said what he will do. And Sarah says, you know, this isn't going to happen. This isn't going to happen. How can it be that I can have that, you know? How can it be? As old as I am, with past the childbearing age and all the rest of it that came into her thoughts. She hears what God says. How can it be? And she laughed. Why did Sarah laugh and say, "Will I really have a child now that I am old?" Verse 14. Can we skip it, please? Is anything too hard for the Lord? In my life, is anything too hard for the Lord? In your life, is anything too hard for the Lord? That question was asked by God, by those visitors that Abraham had. They asked the question, come on now, do you really think about this? What do you think about how big and how great God is? Is anything too hard for the Lord? And Sarah denies laughing as she's caught by God laughing when it really happened. You know, isn't it easy to think that a situation is beyond God's help? You've prayed for somebody for years for them to come to Christ. You've pleaded with God, a family member, a friend. You've prayed for them. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Problems have come and they seem like mountains in our sight and we just can't get around them, and we doubt whether God's able to, whether God will, and we discuss it, we debate it. Perhaps other people. Maybe some suggest, well, just lower your sights a bit. Just lower what you want God to do. If God's laid on our hearts to pray for something or somebody, we can't give up. We cannot do that. In my life many years ago, I prayed for a young man called George. His name was George Wilson, a lovely man. And I prayed for him for years. Then I got my prayer list and crossed him off. I gave up on him. Prayed for him for years, crossed him off my list. Turned out God touched his life, saved his soul, became a vicar, a man of God. And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, this is amazing that George is going to come up. He was introduced to the crowd, the service where we were. And I thought, I give up on him. I thought, beyond prayer, I'll just leave that for now and move on. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Is peace in Gaza too hard for the Lord? Is restoring a broken home too hard for the Lord? Is healing too hard? We are faced with situations as Sarah was faced here. Humanly speaking, physically, it was absolutely impossible for it to happen. And everything was stacked against it. Everything was against Sarah and Abraham having a child. They tried to negotiate that with Hagar, and Ishmael was there. But God came along and said, listen, it's in my plan. In 12 months' time, you will have a child. I want to encourage you this morning not to give up, because nothing is too hard for the Lord. Is anything too hard for the Lord? God can do amazing things, but God can do more than amazing things. God can do miracles. And the greatest miracle is the saving of a human soul. So if you're praying for somebody, keep praying. Look to God to answer that prayer, whatever it might be, because is anything too hard for the Lord? Don't doubt me, God's saying to Sarah. Don't underestimate me. Don't think I can't, because I'm telling you that I will. And he told them twice, I will do this. So keep praying and keep trusting, because there's nothing that's too hard for the Lord. Then moving on to our second one, if you put the next one up, please. You get this next one, hopefully. Maybe not. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, it's there. Yeah. Faster than the speed of light. Okay, fair enough. So now you've got this situation where the two men walk off. I didn't read it, but the two men walk away, and Abraham is left alone with God. And God says in the narrative, Abraham's going to be Abraham, I can't not tell him what's going to happen. So he tells him what's going to happen to Sodom. And we read a little bit of it. I've come down to see if what they're doing is as bad as I've heard. That's talking in our language for God. And Abraham steps up. And Abraham speaks to God. And talks to God about Sodom. Now what's Abraham's interest in Sodom? Lot is living there. He's gone from a tent outside Sodom to living in Sodom to being in the gate of the city of Sodom. He's making progress. He's now one of the elders, if you like, of Sodom. And so he's got this standing in Sodom. And he's living there. And Abraham looks at Sodom and he sees what's going to happen. And he begins to communicate with God, having this conversation with God. And he reasons with God in prayer. And he starts with 50. And he says to God, Lord, if you find 50, would you spare the whole place? And God says, I will. And Abraham uses this phrase, will not the judge of all the world do right? I don't think he's being impudent with God. He's reminding God that he's the judge of all the earth. And will he really destroy the wicked and the righteous in the same thing? So Abraham has the courage to seek God's face for that wicked city called Sodom. And he starts with 50. And he gets down to 10. And then God calls an end to the prayer meeting. For this, then, when the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left. And Abraham returned home. He had done what he could for Sodom. He's got into the presence of God. And he is seeking God's mercy on a wicked city. And he starts with 50 and he gets down to 10 and then God ends the conversation. You know, God is more than just somebody who provides a spiritual shopping list. Went to Morrison's yesterday, Elaine and I. We went in for roast potatoes. And we came out with a basket full of stuff and he took me out. Because it just kind of grew. I do love you, dear. She's not laughing. Fortunately, she's deaf. Just get on with it, she said. But you know what I mean? We treat God like a spiritual Tesco or a spiritual Morrison's. I've got my list here, Lord. I want this, and this. Thank you very much. That's how sometimes you treat God. Sometimes you just bring God our thanks for what he's done for us. He is Abraham, and he's bringing to God a situation. And he's spending time with God. He's bringing to God his concerns. He's talking to God about it. Lord, if you would find 50, would you just spare that city for them? Because you are the judge of all the world. and I believe you will do what is right. What does that take on a person's heart? It takes an understanding of who God is. That God is willing to listen as we bring our requests and our concerns to him. We're not the judge of all the earth, do right? Will you really destroy the righteous with the wicked? And Abraham knew that in that city there was Lot, and Lot was, according to the New Testament, a righteous man, whose soul was grieved by what he saw all around him. And Abraham comes to God, and he leaves it with God, the God who will do exactly what is right. And he goes home. And at the end of chapter 18, when Lot had finished speaking with Abraham, he left, and Abraham returned home. I don't know what Abraham was thinking as he left God's presence. If it was me, I'd be just trusting God that God is going to do what is right and just. So Abraham goes home. And in chapter 19 and verse number 29, so when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham. He remembered Abraham, and he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. And the city of Sodom was destroyed, and the one righteous person in that city, Lot, was brought out. God remembered Abraham. Now, I don't know if that would have happened had Abraham not had that conversation with God. But the fact is this, he did have that conversation, and it seems on the back of that, God showed mercy and brought righteous Lot out of the city. You see, the judge of the world will do what is absolutely right. God has never ever done an unrighteous act in the history of the universe, and he never will. He never will. So what have we learned this morning? Nothing is impossible with God. When everything physical and financial and moral is stacked against us, God makes promises that he will keep. And God's plans will be worked out in our lives, in spite of our misunderstanding of what God's saying, perhaps, or reluctance to really believe what God is saying. But God says, I will. And Sarah laughed, but it happened. And 12 months later, Isaac was born. And Isaac means laughter. God kept his word. God will keep his promises. When God says, I will, he will. And the second incident, what we learned, that God will do what is right. But he wants us to bring our concerns to him. Not as a spiritual shopping list. Let's get away from that. Not as a spiritual thank you very much. But to bring to him our concerns, to converse with God, to talk with God about what really concerns us. And then we stop praying when God says stop praying. Not when we think we should quit. God ended the conversation. But it seems that Abraham's conversation with God brought Lot out of Sodom. God will never judge the righteous. He will preserve and keep the righteous. Let's read to you these verses from 1 Peter chapter 2. Beg your pardon, 2 Peter chapter 2. If he rescued Lot, a righteous man, who was distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men, for that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds he saw and heard. If this is so, then the Lord knows how to rescue godly people from trials and to hold the unrighteous for the day of judgment while continuing their punishment. Our God will do what is right. We might not see it as right, but the righteous judge of all the world will do what is right. And when we perceive to see injustice, and we see things that we think are wrong, we have a God who will do exactly what is right, and we can talk to him about those things that we're concerned about, or worried about, or not haven't got a comfort about them. Abraham brought this to God. God remembered Abraham and rescued Lot. The judge of all this world will do what is right. At the end of every human being who has ever lived, God will dispense justice to us all. And I take treasure in that. That I'll be in heaven because God's the God of justice. Because my faith is in Jesus Christ. And he won't let me go. Why? Because he means what he says. And he says what he means. And justice is a characteristic of God. So here we have two things. Will not the judge of all the world do right? And he will. In circumstances that we don't understand, we can talk to God about that. And nothing is anything too hard for God. The answer is no. In this story, in Genesis 18, neither of those questions were answered in words. But God's actions proved that what he says was absolutely true. We serve a God who says what he means, and means what he says. And if God says, I will, it means God will. Please be encouraged to keep on trusting in him when all seems impossible and all seems perceptibly to be unfair, that God will do what is right, and nothing is impossible with our God.